Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem, welcome back to today's Daf, which is Ervin Tzadik Tes. We are two lines from the top of the Amid. Ubilvad shelo yoytzi chutz me'arba amos. The Mishnah told us a person can stand in Rishus HaYachid and be metaltel a chefetz in Rishus HaRam, provided it doesn't transfer it out of four amos. Says the Gemara, ho hoitzi chayav chatos. Apparently, should he do so, he would be liable a chatos. Now, Rashi says that we're speaking also in the following case, where he's standing up on an elevated area, up on a rooftop, let's say, and leaning down to Rishus HaRam below, and transferring an item, moving around the chayfetz. The Mishnah here indicates that, should he go ahead and transfer it four amos in Rishus HaRam, he would be chayav chatos even. Let's say he decides to pick up the chayfetz, to bring it up to where he's standing. So he lifts it up beyond the airspace of Rishus HaRabim and places it back down in Rishus HaRabim. So he lifted it off to Rishus HaRabim, placed it back down four amos away, but he brought it through the airspace of Makom Ptur, a non-Rishus HaRabim airspace. Here as well, it would seem to sound from the Mishnah that he would be chayef. Ha hoitzi chayev chatas. Should he go ahead and transfer this chayfetz past four amos? He's chayev chatas, even though he took it through the airspace of a makom ptur. So he lifted it up towards himself, taking it through the airspace of beyond the tenth fachim of the Rishus HaRabim proper, which is a makom ptur, and then landed it back down Rishus HaRabim. He would still be chayev. We ignore that intermediate stage. Since he lifted it off the Rishus HaRabim and placed it back down, that's what we reckon with. We consider it to be one continuous act. We ignore the fact that it traveled through Makom Ptur airspace. Lema Masayei L'Rav. Apparently, this would be a right to Rav, who holds likewise, that we ignore the airspace of Makom Ptur. Dama Rava Hamavr Chefetz Mitchilas Arba L'Seif Arba. A person is standing in Rishus HaRabim, picks a Chefetz off the ground, and is maver that chefetz mitchilas arba l'soif arba from point zero up to point four ve'viroy derech olav, and he actually brought the chefetz above himself, meaning he carried it up high in the air through a makom ptur chayev. Why we ignore that middle stage? The fact of the matter is, it never landed in a makom ptur. We learned this yesterday. There's no hanocha in an exempt area. So we ignore that middle stage. The fact is, he picked it off the ground, put it back on the ground, he's chayev. And this Mishnah seems to be a riot to Rav Shita. Says the Gemara, not necessarily. Miktani. Does the Mishnah really say, Im hoitzi chayev chatas? Mishnah says, well, be careful. Don't transfer it more than four amos. Does the Mishnah really say that if he would do so, he'd be chayev chatas? Dilma, perhaps, Im hoitzi patar velasar. Should he do so? Yeah, it's asar midrabbanan, because we're concerned that perhaps next time he'll transferred four amis next to the ground within the Rishus HaRabim proper. But even if he actually does transfer in this manner, meaning he takes it above 10 tefachim, although there's an isser, but there's no chiyuv chatas. He's potter from chatas, aval asr, it's merely asr midrabbanan. So we have no raya to Rava that we consider this to be an actual malacha. Ikad amri, there's another version of the Gemara. The Mishnah tells us you can stand in Rishus HaYachid and move things around in Rishus HaRabim, provided you are not moitzi chutz mi'arba amos. Ha hoitzi patav al asr. Apparently, should he do so, he would be doing an issa d'rabbanan, but there would be no chiyuv min ha'tor, he would be patav aval asr. How does the Gemara know that the Mishnah means only there will be issa d'rabbanan? So Ritva says, because the Mishnah says, ubilvad shelo yoytzi, make sure don't do it. Apparently, even if he would do it, it's only Issa d'Rabban, because otherwise the Mishnah should have said clearly, should he do so, there would be a chiyuv chatas. So we imply from the Mishnah that there's only a chiyuv when there is Issa d'Rabban. Lei mitavet yuf to the Rava. Apparently, there's a steer to Rava. It's inconsistent with Rava, the Marava, Hamaver, Mitchilas, Dalit. Let's say Dalit, the person standing in Rishus HaRabim, transfers the chayfetz from here to there, more than four amis, ve'viru derech olav chayef. And he actually brings it above himself, meaning through airspace of Makom Ptur, he would be chayev. Our Mishnah, which indicates that there's only a Issa d'Rabbanan, seems to be a refutation of Rava's Shita? Says the Gemara, not necessarily. Miktani hoitzi potar al aser. Does the Mishnah really say that? If he would do so, it's all an Issam Rabbanu, but really he's potter from Chatas? No. Dilma, perhaps, im hoitzi chayiv Chatas. Indeed, should he do so, he'd be liable to Chatas, just as Rava told us. So again, Rava holds that if a person picks something off the ground, transfers it more than 4 amos, into Sarab, even though he went through a makom p'tur, he took it derech olav, above himself, up high in the air, we ignore that. And we consider it to be one continuous act. Fact is, the akira was from the ground, the hanacha was back on the ground, and there was nothing to be mafsik, the masa. There was no hanacha in the makom p'tur, and therefore, we consider this to be one masa, a malacha of maver, da'al damas b'shus harabim. Regarding our Mishnah, it's inconclusive. We don't need to have a raya one way or the other, whether or not it's a chiv chatas in this instance. Continues the Gemara, Layamud Adam Mishasayachid v'chulu. So Mishnah tells us a person shouldn't stand in Mishasayachid and be mashtim Mishasarabim, pass water to Mishasarabim. Likewise, he shouldn't spit to Mishasarabim. Amrav Yosef Hishtim v'rok, chayiv chatas. Should he do any one of these things, be mashtim, pass water, or spit out discharge saliva to Mishasarabim, he's chayiv chatas because he transferred this liquid from one rishus to the other. What do you mean? In order for it to be a masa hitsa, let's remember, there needs to be an akir and hanocha, using a surface area of chashivas, a makam chashiv, of a dalad tfachim by dalad tfachim. So the akira needs to be from a surface of dalad tfachim. The hanocha needs to be by placing the thing on a surface of four tfachim by four tfachim. Because the malach of hitsa entails taking an item from one area, placing it into another area. It needs to come from a makam chashav of dalat facham. It needs to be placed on a makam chashav, which you don't have here. But be'inan, don't we require akira v'hanacha? Uprooting and placing down me'al gabi makam dalat from a place which has four tfacham. V'lek, in this case, we don't have it. Because when he is passing water, the miraglaim is coming from an area which is doesn't have a surface space of 4x4 tefachim. Likewise, when he spits, it's not coming from a makam dalat. Machshav toy meshavi lemakam. His intent, the fact that he needs this to happen in this manner, he needs the liquid to be discharged from that very location, that grants prominence to the location. It gives it chashivas. We consider it now as though it is a makam of dalat tefachim. Because otherwise, how are you going to explain the following halacha? Rava told us like this. Zorak, if a person takes an item and throws it, v'noch b'fiyah kelev, and it landed in the mouth of a dog, or b'fiyah kivshon, or in the opening of a furnace, and was immediately incinerated, never landed on the bottom of the furnace. Chayev, chatos, it's chayev achatos. What do you mean? V'be'inon, ha'noch al gavi mokim dalit, v'lek. Don't we need the hanacha to take place on a makam of dalat tefachim? In this case, you don't have it. The mouth of the dog, the opening of the furnace, are not four tefachim. Ella, rather, you must say machshavtoi, mishavi lemakam. His intent, his kavana, the fact that he finds purpose and reason in having his chavetz land in that specific location, he has benefit from it. That gives it a prominence. It grants it chashivas, as though it is a makam of dalat tefachim hachanami here as well in our case. When he discharges these liquids from these specific locations in his body, machshava meshavi lemakam, his machshava gives it a din of makam. Let's see Rashi inside, which is 6 lines from the top of the Amid. It says Rashi, machshavta shoot tzorach lekach, he needs it to be done in this manner, in this fashion, meshavi lehoitzah hashuva, grants it a status of a proper hoitzah. As we see in Rav's case, zorak, Mitchilas dalas of dalat, so he's standing in Shusarab and he throws the food at a distance of 4 amis to have it land in the mouth of his dog, or he throws something b'fiya kivshon, shekolta shal heves v'nisrafa, and gets incinerated by the fire, he's chayiv. Why is that? There's no dalat tefachim. Teretz is because he wants it to be done in this manner. And as Tosis points out in Divrei HaMashkel Mashavtei, he says it's because he has benefit, he has anah from it being done specifically in this manner. He wants the food to land in the mouth of the dog so the dog can have it. He wants the item to land right in that fire So it gets burnt up. Likewise, he wants the miraglaim or the roik to be discharged from that specific location of his body. There's no other way to do it. So in all these cases, since he has benefit, he has hana, he has personal gain from doing it in this specific manner, we consider it to be a proper hoitzah, a proper akira, a proper hanoch, as though the area has four tvachim. Continues the Gemara. But Rava asked, what about the following case? Hu b'shus hayachid, upi ama b'shus harab mau. Let's say he's standing in shus hayachid, and the opening of his aver, where the miraglaim is discharged, is actually located inside b'shus harab. Well, as Mefarshim say the same with the Reich. He's standing in Shesayachet, and his mouth is actually in Shesurab. So the point of exit, where the liquid exits his body, is actually in Shesurab already. Ma, what is the halacha here? Basar Akira's linen. Do we focus on the place where the liquid gathers and uproots, meaning from his actual body, which is in Shesayachet? And in that case, there is a malacha taking place, because the Akira is in Shesayachet, and it's going to land in Shesurab. Or we focus on the point of exit where the liquid actually gets discharged from his body, which in this case is in Rosh Hashanah. So it begins in Rosh Hashanah and it lands in Rosh Hashanah. There's no malach, teiku, we leave it unresolved. So a quick summary here, we had the halacha and the Mishnah. A person shouldn't stand in one Rosh Hashanah and discharge meraglaim or roik over to the other Rosh Hashanah. Where is the Akira me'al gabe mokim dalad? Says the Gemara, because of his machshava, we give it prominence, and it's as though it left an area which has a surface of four tfachim. Rabbi concludes with a shayla. In the case where the pi amma is already Rosh Hashanah, do we focus on the exit point of the liquid, in which case there's no malacha, or do we focus back on the mokim akira, which is his body, where the liquid gathers and leaves? In this case, since the body is Rosh Hashayachid, and it ends up being transmitted into Rosh Hashanah, a malach has taken place, and we leave it teku. V'chein lo yoroik. Rabbi Da Omer, Rabbi Da tells us a chiddush that even if he should happen to be walking along the Rosh Hashanah, and he feels some roik in his mouth, some saliva which has gathered, which has separated itself, he shouldn't continue walking for amis until he discharges that saliva, because it's considered to be a load. Says the Gemara, Afagav le hafichba. So you mean to say, as soon as the saliva separates itself in his mouth, it gathers, even though he didn't actually curl it up and indicate that he has begun the process of spitting it out, you already consider it to be a separate entity just by the mere fact that it gathers and it curls and it separates itself. Is already considered to be on its way out and considered to be a load? Is that the case? Vatnan, but we have a Mishnah in Kalim which seems to say otherwise. Mishnah says, Hayoichel dveila biyodai misuavis. A person was eating a dried fig of truma with hands that were unclean, meaning they were unwashed, they have a din of shani latuma, and if they should touch truma, they make it pasul. So he was eating this fig, vehichnes yodai lesech piv, and he reached into his mouth, little tsrur, to pull out a pebble. Rabbi Meir mitame. Rabbi Meir says the fig had now become tame due to the fact that there's saliva in his mouth which came into contact with the fig, which made it hukshal lekabel tuma. It is now susceptible for tuma. And the fact that he touched the fig with his hand makes the fig tame. So according to Rabbi Meir, one's saliva has a din of liquid, mashkin. So when that liquid comes into contact with fruit, it makes it hukshal lekabel tuma. Rabbi Yosi Matar, he says just the opposite. Saliva in one's mouth doesn't have a status of liquid and doesn't have the ability to be maksha fruit for tuma. Therefore, even if he touched the fig with his tummy hands, nothing happens, because the fig never came into contact with real liquid. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, he says the middle route. It depends. He fechba tummy. If he actually curled the saliva in his mouth, so you overturned it, you moved it around to indicate that he's about to discharge it, then it attains its own status, has enough liquid, and it can be makshir the fig for tumah. But otherwise, if he didn't turn it over, he didn't curl up the liquid in his mouth, then it doesn't have its own status. It is not, it's not considered to be liquid, as a din of the person's saliva, which doesn't have a din of a mashke. So what do we see here? That even liquid in one's mouth, his saliva, which gathered, which separated itself, is not considered to be a separate entity, unless he curled it up, he overturned it. And this seems to be inconsistent with our Mishnah, that as soon as it got separated within his mouth, that's already considered to be a masoy, a load on Shabbos. Om Rabbi Yochanan Mukhlefes Ashita. Indeed, Rabbi Yehuda changed his mind. He switched out of his opinion. And he indeed requires not only the right to separate itself within its mouth, but also to overturn, to curl up, which indicates that it's on its way out and is no longer deemed as part of his body, just as he indicated the Mishnah in Kalim, unlike our Mishnah. So initially, he held the opinion of our Mishnah, then he changed his opinion, and he requires hifeich, that it should curl up, it should be turned over, and completely separate from his body to be considered liquid by the halacha of tumah, and a load when it comes to Shabbos. Rish Lakish Amar, lo'ilum le'sachlef, let's not switch things around. There's a difference between our Mishnah, which is speaking about phlegm, kichai, is phlegm, which is not just ordinary saliva. Now, as soon as that phlegm separated itself, gathered, it's already on its way out. It's not considered to be part of his entity, and therefore it's considered to be a load. And that's what Yehuda is referring to in our Mishnah, as opposed to the Mishnah in Kalim, by the fig, he's speaking about ordinary saliva. Ordinary saliva is more connected to one's body, so unless he actually turns it over in his mouth and indicates that he's spitting it out, it is not considered to be its own separate entity. Rish Lakish Amar Lo'ilum Le'sachlev, don't switch things around. V'acha b'mayaskinan b'kichoy, our Mishnah is speaking about his phlegm. So as soon as it gets separated, even before hifeich, we consider it to be its own separate entity, and it's considered to be carrying on Shabbos. V'atanya, but then we learn in a brisa, which indicates otherwise, that even when it comes to saliva, you don't need to have hifeich. Rabbi Doimer, kichoy, if he has phlegm, v'nitlash, and it got gathered and separated, we consider that to be a load for Shabbos. My love, should we not assume that the brisa here is referring to two separate things? Kichoy is one thing, his phlegm, and also the reich. So v'nitlash is referring to the reich that became nitlash, and as soon as it separates itself, even before hifeich, even before curling up, it is already considered to be a load. My love, roik v'nitlash, even when it comes to saliva, as soon as it got detached within his mouth, it is already considered loy, no, kichoy v'nitlash. The Brayse is specific, speaking about kichoy in particular. As soon as that gathers and separates, it's considered to be a load. But when it comes to saliva, you need more than that to indicate separateness. You need hifeich. So according to Rish Lakish, there's a difference between kichoy, which is thick phlegm, which is more separate than saliva. As soon as that kichoy becomes separate, it has its own din. But when it comes to saliva, you need more than just nitlash. It needs to be hifeich as well. Says the Gemara, but that's not the case. But Tanya, we learned in the Brayser, Rabbi Doimer, kichoy shenitlash. If his phlegm was separated in his mouth, v'chein roike shenitlash. Likewise, when it comes to saliva, as soon as it gathered, as soon as it became separate, even within his mouth, even before curling it up and turning it over, lo yahalach talad ames at shiyorik. He must refrain from walking for ames before he spits it out. So it's very clear that even when it comes to roik, as soon as it was separated within his mouth, it is already deemed like a separate entity. Unlike Rish Lakish. Ella, says the Gemara, you're right, machavarta, the proper approach is kedishanin mikara, as we answered earlier, meaning Rabbi Yechanan's approach, which was, apparently, Rabbi Yehuda switched his opinion. Initially, he held, like our Mishnah, that when the roik became separate within the mouth, that is already considered to be a load. But then, as we see in the other Mishnah, he switched out of that opinion, and he required the roik to be turned over within the mouth, to be curled over. And only then is it considered to be detached from the body, a separate entity, and has the ability to be machshir the fig, because it's now considered to be liquid. And likewise, he should refrain from carrying it for Amisr Sarabim, as we learned in our Mishnah. So once again, when it comes to Machshel Lekabotuma, we have three shitas regarding saliva. According to Rav Meir, it's always Machshel, it's always considered to be a liquid. According to Rav Yesi, never. According to Rav Yudah, if he curled it up, Hivrechpa, then has a din to be Machshel. And likewise, Rav Yudah holds that you must refrain from walking in this manner for Amis and Shisarabim. Now it appears from the Gemara that when it comes to Kichai, which is a thicker substance, in that case, as soon as it detaches itself, it's Nitlash, would appear that according to Rav Yudah, you must refrain from walking for Amis and Shisarabim. Omer Shlokish, Kiach Bifnei Rabbi. If a person discharges his phlegm in the presence of his Rebbe and repulses him, Chayiv Misa, he's liable to Misa, as she says, Bidei Shemayim. Shenemar kol misanai avu maves, oh my haters, this is the Torah speaking. Oh my haters, desire death, al tikru lemisanai, instead of reading lemisanai, elemasniai. Those who cause me to hate, meaning they do things that cause me to be repulsed. So here it's in front of the Rebbe represents the Torah, you're doing something in front of him that causes me to be repulsed. And the result is chayv mis. Says the Gemara, but why is it the student's fault? V'amenas onus, it's an onus. He's faultless. He must have some sort of ailment or cold that's causing him to do this. Says the Gemara, kiach v'rak kamrinan. I'm not holding him at fault for bringing up the phlegm, rather for transmitting it, for discharging it in front of his Rebbe. Should have done it off to the side, into a tissue, not in presence of his Rebbe, causing him to be repulsed. Continues the Mishnah, lo yamad adam b'shesayachet. A person should refrain from standing in Rishis Sayachid and leaning over, drinking from this Kli in Rishis Sarabim, or Rishis Sarabim, Vishti Rishis Sayachid, nor should he stand in Rishis Sarabim and lean over and drink in Rishis Sayachid, Elim Kein Hichnis, Roisha Verubay Lamakam Shu Shaisa, unless he's careful to lean over, to insert his head and most of his body into the other Rishus where he's drinking. And the concern is because, perhaps, if he doesn't do that, he might bring the cup with the liquid back to its current location, in which case he's being moitzi, a chayfetz from one rishus to the other. V'chein begas, likewise, when it comes to a wine press, as the Gemara will explain, in what context these words were stated. Says the Gemara, we have a kasha. Reisha Rabbanan of a sefer Rabbi Meir. The Reisha, meaning the previous Mishnah, which allowed a person to stand in one rishus and to handle an object from the other rishus without any concern that inadvertently perhaps he'll bring it over to his rishus, is following Shitas Rabban, who are not concerned about that eventuality. The Sefer Rabbi Meir and the latter part of the Mishnah, the one that we just learned, seems to be following Rabbi Meir, who is concerned about that, as we see later in the Mishnah of Kuf Aleph. He doesn't allow standing in one rishus, handling a key in the other rishus, for concern that inadvertently he might bring it into this rishus. This concern seems to be reflected in our Mishnah. Don't stand in one rishus and drink in the other. Feel concerned that you might bring the Kli over here. It's a bit difficult that the anonymous Mishnahs here should be inconsistent. One should be following Rav Meir, one Rabban. Om Rav Yosef, there's no kash. B'chafetzin shet srichen loy, v'divrei ha-koil. When we're speaking about handling utensils which he needs, she has use for, then all agree there's a concern, such as in our Mishnah. There's a concern that the Kli with the water, which he currently needs for his drinking purposes, will cause him to inadvertently bring it over to the rishus that he's standing. So since it's a chevet that he needs, all agree, even the Rabban agree, there is such a concern. It's a very real chashash that will bring it in to his current location. Therefore, we require that he lean over his head and most of his body into the other rishus, which will remind him that it's Shabbos, and will prevent them from making this mistake. The other Mishnah was speaking about a person who's just handling random kelim that he doesn't currently need, he's not currently using. In which case, the Rabbanan say, we're not concerned about inadvertent transfer. Says the Gemara, Iboilu, so the Bnei Yeshiva asked the following question. The Mishnah tells us, a person should refrain from standing in one rishus and lean over to drink in the other rishus unless he's mostly there. Karmless mai. Does this halacha apply to a karmless as well? So if he's standing in a karmless and leaning over to a rishayachet, do we require roish of a rubai there as well? Omar Abayi, hihi, it's the same thing. The same halacha that applies to Rosh Hashanah, Rosh Hashanah applies to Kamus as well. Omar Rava, how could you say that? Hi gufa gzera. Let's remember the entire concept of Karmelis. Why can't we transfer from a Rosh Hashanah to a Karmelis? It's a gzera d'rabbanan because it might lead one to transfer from Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah. So even direct transfer to the Karmelis, should he actually transfer that kli back to the Karmelis? He's merely doing an issa d'rabbanan. It's a gzera on account of something worse than that. Va'anan nekum. And we should get up, v'nigzor gzera l'gzera, should apply gzera on top of that gzera. We never do that. We learn it from the pasuk of Shemartim. It's from Shemarti, who meant to erect safeguards around the Torah, but not a safeguard around that safeguard, a double safeguard. So the entire issa of transferring from a karmelis to another just is merely the rabbanan, so we shouldn't come to do issa Torah. We're going to go ahead and apply another gzera on top of that, not allow one to stand in the karmelis and drink from the shayachid, for concern that he might bring the kli over here, and this might lead him to perhaps do the same in Rosh Hashanah. It's a double stage gzera, and we don't do that. So what does Abaye hold? So Tosfos in Shabbos Daf Yud Aleph tells us that Abaye holds it's one package deal. People have difficulty differentiating between different types of domains. This is a karmelis, Rosh Hashanah. So if we allow it here, even though it's only a karmelis, this might lead him to do the same when it comes to Rosh Hashanah and Rosh Hashanah, where there's a very real concern of a malacha. So therefore Tosfos says Abaye is not concerned about Rava's kasha. Well, it's a double gzera. No, it's not a double gzera. It's a one package deal because one leads to the next very easily. Okay. Omar Abaye says Abaye actually have a raya. And this concern applies to a karmelis as well. Mana aminala, how do I know that it applies to a karmelis? Midigtani v'chein begas. What are the last two words of the Mishnah? V'chein begas. The same halacha applies to a wine press. Apparently we're speaking about standing in one rishus, leaning over and drinking the other. The same thing applies to a wine press. Now, what is the wine press? A rishus hayachid? Then you've just repeated the same halacha of the first part of the Mishnah. Apparently, says Abaye, this gas, this wine press, is actually a karmelis. And the Mishnah here is informing us that even when it comes to a karmelis, you must be careful. So if you're standing in a karmelis and you're leaning over to the street, you have to make sure that you can only drink if it's Reish V'Rubai in the other rishus, because the same concerns that apply elsewhere applies to a karmelis as well. V'Rava Amar? No. These two words of the Mishnah V'chein Begas are unconnected to our discussion at hand. L'inyan Maser. It's actually pertaining to an entirely different context. The halacha is of Maser. V'chein Amar Sheshes. V'chein Begas L'inyan Maser. Likewise, Sheshes said that these words V'chein Begas apply to Maser. In what way? This non, as we learned in the Mishnah. Shoysin Alagas. We know that a person could partake with an achilas arai, informal meal, informal snack, informal drink, from tevel, something where the tumor and maaser were not yet separated. He can take it and drink an achilas arai, ashtiyas arai, and not be obligated in tumor and maasers. So what happens if there's wine in the wine press? Says the Mishnah, shoysen alagas. A person is allowed to drink on top of the wine press, because whatever he drinks there is considered to be a shtiyas arai, an informal, a snack drink. Even if he diluted the wine with hot or cold water, upater, and he'll be exempt from maaser, as long as he's sitting on the wine press, which makes it an informal drink. Divrei Rav Meir, so according to Rav Meir, he needs to be on the wine press, and that's what our Mishnah is referring to. You want to drink and be pater from maaser? Make sure you're in the wine press, or at least your head and most of your body is positioned over the wine press, in which case, whatever you drink there, even diluted wine, diluted with hot, with cold, it's irrelevant. It's considered to be an informal drink, and your potter from Meiser. So that's Rava's Pshat Now Mishnah. So the Chaim Begas is in reference to Maser, unrelated to Hilchos Shabbos. So that's the first sheet of Rav Meir, Rav Lezer Tzadik Machayev. He says, drinking in this manner, even on the wine press, once you diluted that wine, it has a din of kva. You've granted prominence to that wine. You've diluted it. You've turned it into a formal drink, formal drinking experience, and it's unconnected anymore to the wine press. You chayiv in trumas amaisis. Middle root. Depends. Alacham and Chayiv, if he diluted the wine with hot water, then he's Chayiv a Maaser before he drinks it. Well, Atzoin and Potter, if he diluted it merely with cold water, he's Potter. Why? Because when he diluted it with cold, he still has the ability to pour it back into the wine press. In which case, we don't consider it to be a drink of permanence, a prominent drinking experience, because he can still pour it back. He's just taking a sip. For all he knows, he'll go pour back the rest. So it doesn't have prominence, doesn't have a status of a formal drink, and therefore it's pata from maser. But if he diluted it with hot water, in that case he doesn't have the ability to spill it back anymore because it's going to ruin the wine in the wine press. So in that case, the fact that he diluted it and separated from the rest of the wine, he granted prominence to this diluted wine. It's considered to be its own entity. It gains stature. It's viewed as a permanent drink, not just as a snack. And he's chayv maaser. Okay, so in summary, when it comes to drinking wine of tevel, we have three shittas. Rameyah says, if you're on the wine press, you're okay. Contra Lezer Tzadik, as soon as you diluted that wine, it gives it prominence and is no longer considered to be a snack and an informal drink. Contra Chachamim, it depends if you have the ability to spill it back in the wine press or not. And getting back to our Mishnah, one should refrain from standing in one rishus and drink from the other unless you're mostly in that rishus. The Gemara tells us, we're speaking about chafetz matzrichim, like he needs this utensil with the drink inside. Therefore, even the Rabban would agree there's a concern about inadvertent transfer. So unless you're Rosh HaVerubah in the new Rishos, you shouldn't be drinking. Now, the last words of the Mishnah, V'chein Bagas, is referring to either the halacha of a Carmelist, that this same concern applies to a Carmelist, that's Abaye's approach, whereas Rabbi said, it's unrelated to our discussion, it's concerning the halacha of Maser, that a person must find himself either completely or mostly on that wine press, in accordance with Shitas Rav Meir, to allow him to drink an informal drink without separating Mas. Continues the Mishnah. Koilit Adam mena maschila lematam yutvach. So a bit of an introduction is at place here. Rashi explains as follows. They used to have the home with a flat roof. How they divert the rainwater off the roof? They would smear the roof with some cement, some waterproofing, perhaps at a slight slant, a slight angle, so that the water trickles into the eave trough. So Rashi says it was arranged like this. You had the roof with a wall, and you had some small outlets coming from that roof over to the mazchila. The mazchila was a board running alongside that wall. Right? So you have the wall, and you have the mazchila running alongside the wall. And the maschil was generally within three tfachim of the rooftop. So what was the purpose, what was the function of the maschil? Simple, to divert the water coming from the outlets off the roof. They would trickle onto the maschil, which would divert that water away from the house. So the water runs along the maschil, on the top surface of the maschil, all the way away from the home. So that's the maschil, which is generally within three tfachim, to the rooftop, and therefore is regarded like a Rosh HaSayachit. That's the maschila. Then we have the tzinar, which was a pipe, a downspout, coming from the roof, running down along that wall, and with an outlet on the bottom. Now this tzinar, the opening of the tzinar at least, was at a distance from the roof, was beyond the roof, was beyond three tefachim, and therefore is not considered to be part of that roof, is not considered to be a Rishus Sayachit. So the question here is regarding collecting water from any of these eave troughs, from the maschila, from the tzinar, can one do so? Let's say he's standing in Rishus Aram below. Can he pick up his kli to collect some water, which is shooting out of these eave troughs? Says the Mishnah, depends. Koilet Adam min maschila lamatam yitvach. So even if this mazchila is within 10 tefachim to the surface of Rishus HaRabim, he can't go ahead and take his kli and affix it to the mazchila, put it right next to the mazchila to collect water. Because the mazchila is Rishus HaYachid, as we explained, it's within three tefachim to the rooftop. So by drawing the water directly from that maschila, he's taking it from the Rishus HaYachad into Rishus HaRabim. Rather, what can he do? Says the Mishnah, Kehilat Adam. He can go ahead and intercept the airborne water. So the water that shoots out of the maschila and is right now in middle of the air, that he can go ahead and collect. Because that is simply taking from the air, not from a Rishus HaYachad. So Kehilat Adam in a maschila, he can go ahead and intercept the airborne water coming out of the maschila. L'mati mitfachim, when the maschil is even within 10th facham, the Rishus HaRabim, because it has a din of Rishus HaYachad, since it's so close to the rooftop. Uminat Sinar, however, when it comes to collecting water from that pipe, that long pipe, coming off the roof, where the opening of the pipe below is so far from that roof, beyond 3 facham, it's not considered Rishus HaYachad, it's considered to be a Makam Ptur. So in that case, Mekal Makam Shaisa, he can drink in any manner which he sees fit. He could actually affix his mouth or his kli to the opening of that sinar because he's simply drawing water from a makam tur. Says the Gemara, koilet in avo mitzarif loy. So the Mishnah began with the maschila that he could only snatch that airborne water coming out of the maschila, but he can't actually be mitzarif, put his kli right directly to the maschila. My time of why? What's wrong with doing that? Amar Rav Nachman, hacha b'maschila pachas mi gimel. We're speaking about this board, this eave trough, which is situated within three tefachim to the rooftop, in which case it has a din like the gag, because if it's within three to the roof, it has a din of the rooftop, which is a shusayachd. Tani nami hachi, we learn likewise in a braisa. We're going to see in the braisa as well that within three tefachim to the rooftop, is considered to be a Rishus HaYachad, and therefore the only way you can collect that water is if it's airborne. But if you're actually getting close to that surface, you're affixing your kli to the surface, it's considered as though you're taking from that surface. The Brayis is actually going to speak about a different type of case. We have two neighbors, two Rishus HaYachads. You have one roof and a roof next to a 10th Fachim in elevation. They didn't make an Erev, so you can't transfer one to the other. It says the Brayis, Oymud Adam Rishus HaYachad. Person can stand in Rishus HaYachad in his own territory, and lifts his hand 10 tefachim above, near his friend's rooftop, within 3 tefachim of his friend's rooftop, the only thing he can do is collect that water mid-air. He can go ahead and intercept the airborne water, provided he doesn't actually put his kli directly touching that rooftop, in which case it would be considered like he's drawing water from that rooftop. So if he does so within 3 tefachim of the rooftop, he actually takes his kli and connects it to the surface of the house next door. If it's within 3 tefachim to the rooftop, it's considered as though he's drawing from the rooftop itself. So we see this concept in this price. The only thing he can do is intercept the airborne water. It would seem that even if it's within 3 tefachim on the rooftop, since he's not actually drawing from a surface, he's just taking from mid-air, this concern doesn't apply. Tani idach, we learned a similar braiser as well, Layamad Adam, Rishus HaYachad, V'yagbiya yodei l'malam asara tefachim, person shouldn't stand in his Rishus HaYachad, and lift his hand beyond 10 tefachim, lefachis megimo samach legag, to within 3 tefachim of his friend's neighbor, v'yitzaref, and affixes kli to the surface to collect water in that manner, because it is as though he's collecting from the roof itself. And he's transferring from one Rishus HaYachad to the other, which he can't do. Avo koil to v'shoisa, but he can go ahead and intercept that water, that airborne water, and drink freely. So once again, the maschila, which is within 3 tefachim to that rooftop, right, you have the roof, you have the wall, you have the maschila running alongside that wall, which is meant to drain the water coming off that roof. That maschila is within 3 tefachim to the rooftop. The only thing you can do to collect water coming out of the maschila is to keep your kli at a distance from that maschila, to have the water shoot into your kli, intercept that airborne water. But to actually place the kli adjacent to the maschila and collect it directly, you can't do that, because it is considered as though you're taking from the rooftop, which is a Rishus HaYachad, down to where you're standing, which is a Rishus HaRabim. However, the Mishnah told us, Minat Sinar, mikomakom shoyz. The tzinor is a different type of thing. It's the pipe coming off the roof, which is extending beyond three tefachim. In that case, there are no restrictions. You can drink freely directly from that tzinor, which is a makom p'tur. Tana, however, we learned in a brisa, im yesh b'tzinor dal dalet asur. If the surface of that pipe is actually large, it's 4x4 tefachim, then you cannot go ahead and directly take water from there. Why? Because even though it's within 10 tefachim of Yisurabim, let's remember that a surface area 4x4, even if it's below 10, is a karmelis. It's as though he's taking one shus to the other, from the tzina, which is deemed a karmelis, to the Yisurabim. So in that case, he's like the maschila. He can only go ahead and intercept airborne water. He can't actually directly take water from the tzina itself. Now Rashi points out another aspect here, that the Mishnah only allowed direct drawing from the tzinor if it is within 10 tefachim to Shesuram. Why? Because if it's above 10 tefachim, there's always a concern that perhaps the tzinor will have a large surface space, a 4x4. And let's remember, a 4x4 surface area above 10 tefachim is a Rishis HaYachid. That can result in a Issa Deraisa. Therefore, Rashi says that the Mishnah is specifically allowing only if it's below 10 tefachim. In which case, when the tzinor is below 10, it doesn't have a surface area of 4x4, so it's a makom p'tur. So you can go in and directly access the tzinor, take water directly, without any concern. And if it is 4x4, then it's a karmelis, he must refrain. But should the tzinor be above 10 tefachim, says Rashi, there's a chance that he might confuse matters. He'll allow drawing directly from the tzinor, even if it has 4x4 tefachim. And in that case, if it's 4x4 above 10, he actually did a melacha d'oraisa. So since it could lead to even a possibility of a melacha d'oraisa, we don't allow it. So once again, if the tzinor is above 10 tefachim, then he can never draw directly from the tzinor. We're concerned that perhaps it's going to have a surface of 4x4, which will be a Rishis HaYachid, which will result in melacha d'oraisa. So the only thing he can do is intercept from the airborne water. However, if the tzinor is below 10, and that is the discussion now, Mishnah, the tzinor is below 10, then it can never result in an Issa d'oraisa, because below 10 can never become a Rishis HaYachid. So you can go ahead and draw directly from the tzinor, provided that it doesn't have a surface of 4x4, because if it does, then it will be a karmelis. But at worst case, it can only become a karmelis. So as long as you make sure it's not a karmelis, you'll have to draw directly. So in summary, regarding intercepting airborne water, that you can do when it comes to maschila or a tzinor. Regarding direct drawing from the pipe itself, so maschila you cannot, because it's within three tefachim to the roof, it's considered Rishis HaYachid. When it comes to the tzinor, it depends. If it's small in size, it doesn't have a surface of 4x4, in which case it's not a karmelis, and it's below 10 tefachim, in which case it can never result in a Issa d'oraisa, because it can never be a Rishis HaYachid. So as long as it fits that criteria, you can go ahead and be mitzaref, meaning you can place your kli right next to the tzinor and draw directly from the tzinor to Rishis HaRabim without any concern. Continues the Mishnah. But in Rishis HaRabim, if you have a water hole in Rishis HaRabim, v'chol yosoy gavoya yotfachim, and it has a ridge, the chol yosoy is the ridge built around the bar, which is 10 tfachim in height. Chalayin shal gabav, m'malin hemenu b'shabas. So if there's a window positioned above that bar, so you have a bar in Rishis HaRabim with a home built right next to it, and there's a window situated above the bar. So if the bar has the chulia, which is 10 tefachim high, that allows this fellow living in the home to send his pail down into the bar, draw some water back through his window. Because his window is Rishis HaYachid, and so is the bar. He's merely transferring from one Rishis HaYachid to the other. Likewise, Ashba Rishis HaRabim, Kavoy Yotfachim, you have a heap of trash in Rishis HaRabim, 10 tefachim high, which is considered Rishis HaYachid. Chalayin shal gabav, the window which is situated above it, Sheifchin L'soichem Ayim B'Shabbos, they can go ahead and pour some waste, some water, from the window over to the Ashba, which as well is considered Rishis HaYachid. B'mayaskinan, what are we speaking about? Where is this bar situated? Meaning, we have a bar, a home next to it. Is there some space in between? Is there Rishis HaRabim between the bar and the home? Ilema besmucha, we're speaking that the bar is within close proximity to the home, and there's no rishus harabim in between. There's maybe three tefachim, which is not considered rishus harabim. If that's the case, why does the Mishnah describe the bar as having this ridge 10 tefachim high? Why is that necessary? Look, the home and the bar are so close to each other, there's no rishus harabim intersecting. So even if there's no ridge 10 tefachim high, but the bar is 10 tefachim deep, is rishus hayachid? The chaloyin above it is rishus hayachid. Why can't you transfer from one to the other? Through the slight airspace in between, which is a makam tur, says the Gemara, Omar Avhuna, hacha b'may askinan b'mufleges min hakos labo. Indeed, this bar was situated at a distance of 4 tefachim from that home. And that 4 tefach space constitutes a rishus harabim. So the only way he can go and transfer from the home to the bar is if he makes sure to lift his pail beyond the 10 tefach reach of rishus harabim. So if it's above 10 tefach, it's a makam tur, and that allows him to transfer from the chaloin through the makam tur to the bar, which is rishus harabim. That explains the Mishnah. V'tama dikachol yasar. So this is only allowed because there's a ridge 10 tefachim high, which necessitates lifting that pail above the chulya, above 10 tefachim, into the makam tur, into the bar, through the makam tur, into the bar. Ha leka chulya asara. But if there wouldn't be this high ridge, then it would be problematic, because when he transfers from his window down to the bar, he's putting his pail through the airspace of rishus harabim, within 10 tefachim of the street. He's going to be transferring from his chaloin, which is rishus hayachid, over to the bar, which as well is rishus hayachid, through the airspace of rishus harabim. So that explains the Mishnah. This ridge needs to be 10 tefachim high, which will obligate him to go ahead and pick up his pail, send it from his window over the ridge, which is now a makam tur, because it's beyond the 10 tefach reach of rishus harabim, into the bar, which is okay. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, he has a different approach. Even if the bar is situated very close to the window, why does the Mishnah speak about a ridge which is 10 tefachim high? Why is that necessary? Why can't he go ahead and directly access the bar without this high ridge? Says Amar, you're right. It's not really necessary for that allowance. But the Mishnah here is coming to inform us another halacha. The Mishnah is simply coming to inform us another concept. That not only if you have a pit which is 10 tefachim below the surface, is that considered rishus hayachid? Even if the bar is merely 5 tefach below surface, and it has a chulya built around the ridge, around the edge, which has a 5 tefach elevation. So the depth and the height combine with each other to create an enclosure, a surface which is 10 tefach deep, which has a din of rishus hayachid, and that's the point of the Mishnah. So again, the Mishnah describes his fellow using the bar through his window. And the Mishnah tells us that the chulya is 10 tefach high. We have two approaches. Either because the bar was at a distance from the home, in which case he has to make sure to throw his pail up in the air, up high in the air, beyond the rishus harabim. And the fact that there's a ridge around the bar that necessitates the high throwing and addresses the rishus harabim problem. That's one approach. The Mishnah is simply coming to inform us that the depth of the bar, together with the height of the chulya, can create that enclosure within, which is rishus hayachid. Ashba rishus harabim. Likewise, if you have a heap of trash, which is 10 tefachim high, you can go ahead and access it on Shabbos from your window, because the trash, 10 tefach high, is rishus hayachid. V'leichai shinan shem etenot al ashba. We're not concerned that perhaps part of the trash will be removed, which will diminish its height, and I'll continue using it, even though it's no longer rishus hayachid. Perhaps it's a karmus, perhaps it's a rishus harabim. He's going to be transferring from his home to the rishus harabim. Why are we concerned about that? V'haravin barav ada, Omer Yitzchak. Didn't Ravin barav ada tell us the name of Yitzchak? Masa b'movi echad. There was a story with a certain alleyway which was open to rishus harabim, and it had one solid mechitza. What about the other two mechitzas? As follows. Shetzide echad kol yam. One side of the alleyway culminated at sea, and there was a seawall there creating a mechitza. Shetzide echad kol ashpa, and the other side culminated at a heap of trash which created a mechitza. The question is, can we carry in this mavi? Uba masel fnei Rebbe, and the story was presented to Rebbe. V'lo yomar boy lo yisr li heter. He didn't rule stringently nor leniently. He didn't want to say isr or heter. Why? He didn't want to allow it. We're concerned that perhaps, yeah, right now there are machitzas, but perhaps in the future the garbage will be removed and the machitza will no longer exist. Or perhaps the sea will kick up some refuse which will obliterate that machitza. Therefore, he was concerned, he didn't want to allow it. On the other hand, he didn't say that it's asr to hakaimun machitzas because currently there are machitzas here. So in any case, we see there's a concern about removal of ashpa. Why kasha? The answer is, it depends. Hada yachid, hada rabbi. When it's a privately accessed trash, yeah, there's a concern that perhaps the private owner will remove his trash. And that indeed was the case with the mavoi that came to Rebbe. Whereas in our Mishnah, which is rabim, it's a publicly used trash heap, where there's no concern that things will change too quickly, let's assume. The way it is now, it's 10 tefachim high, will remain for long term as well. Continues the Mishnah. Ilon, show you meisach al oritz. You have a wide tree, wide branches, hovering over the area and creating this canopy. If the branches reach to within three tefachim to the ground below, metaltalum tachtav, you can carry within this area, is considered to be a proper machitza. Another halacha, shirasha gevoyim min ha'aretz, gimel tefachim, the roots of this tree are three tefachim above the ground, they are considered like a tree now, because it's beyond three tefachim, and one is not meant to use a tree on Shabbos, might pull off a branch, lo yeshev alein, he shouldn't sit on these roots. Amar av huna, very davishua, getting back to this wide tree, a metaltalum boy, yasrim beis asayim. The only way you can carry freely underneath that tree is if it's 2 sa in size or less. That's the share given to an enclosure, which was a non-residential enclosure. So if it's within 2 sa, has that personal flavor to it, and we allow carrying within it. But if it's beyond that share, it's too big, it's considered to be like an open, unenclosed area. Now we're speaking about a tree that perhaps he even planted for the sake of creating this canopy, to create this enclosure. It's a hukaf ledira. It was enclosed for the sake of residency. So why this limitation? Why this tus halacha? My time or why? Mishum dahav ledira shatashmish laver. Yeah, certainly he created to make this enclosure, to create this shelter, but it's a dira. It's a place of residence which is servicing an open area. It says Rashi on the top line, Mishum dahav ledira shatashmish laver, ein lodu batomet. It's not intended for constant use, constant dwelling. It's meant to provide shelter for the watchmen. They come to watch the fields. They sit inside this tree, protected from the elements, to keep an eye on the field. So it's a residency which is really servicing the outdoors. It says the Gemara b'chol dira shatashmish la'aver. Whenever we have a dira, a place of residence which is really serving an avir area, an open area, in metaltan b'yosim beis asayim, you can only carry if it's 2 sa in size or less, because it has a din of a non-residential enclosure. Okay, time for a brief chazara of today's daf. We began with the halacha of Rava, that if a person standing in Shas Rabim takes a chafetz and carries it 4 amas, even if he lifts it above himself through a makam tur, he's chayev chatos. And we were looking for a raya or a kasha from our Mishnah, and we didn't really conclude one way or the other. We learned that if a person is standing in one rishus and he passes water or he spits into the other rishus, he's chayev chatos. The fact that he needs it to be done in this way gives prominence to the makam of the Akira. It is regarded like the liquid was lifted off a prominently sized area 4x4 tefachim. Now if he's standing in one rishus and the place of the exit of that liquid, the Pia Amma, is sitting in Shas Rabim, do we consider it to be a melacha or not? We leave it unresolved. And the Gemara concluded that according to Rabbi Yehuda, the only time saliva has the ability to be considered mashkin, to make something susceptible to tuma, or to require a person to refrain from walking with it, 4 amas in Shas Rabim, is if it's separated in his mouth, and also, hifich, he went ahead and curled it, he overturned it, which detached it from his body, so to speak, and gives it its own prominence, its own chashivas, has a din, like a masoi on Shabbos. We learned that a person is supposed to present himself properly in front of his Rebbe, not to go ahead and cause him to be repulsed. We learned that a person who's standing in one rishus and would like to drink something in the other must make sure that his head and most of his body is leaning over for concern that he might go ahead and bring the kli back with him. The Mishnah included the word b'chein bagas, Abaye says, that's coming to teach us that the same concern applies to a karmless. And Rava says, no, it pertains to an entire different halacha of drinking wine on the wine press. We're learned that a person can go ahead and intercept airborne water from either the maschila or from the tzina without concern. Being mitzaref, meaning directly drawing from the maschila's asr because it's too close to the roof, it's considered like a shesayachet. But he can go ahead and do that from the tzinar, which is situated at a distance from the roof, provided it's small in size, less than 4 tfachim, it's below 10 tfachim, in which case, it's a makom tor. We learned that the depth of the bar and the height of the ridge are mitzaref to asar tfachim, and the enclosure underneath that tree needs to be 2 saw less, because it's a non-residential enclosure.